Coming up on Tech News Today, Dropbox, a bargain at $8 billion. 800,000 Galaxy Gears sold, can't be wrong, unless it's actually shipped, of course. And Valve promises a virtual reality prototype coming to Steam. All that and more coming up.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today for Tuesday, November 19th, 2013. Tech News Today is brought to you by GoToMeeting with HD Faces by Citrix, the powerfully simple way to meet with coworkers and clients from anywhere. Share the same screen and see each other face-to-face with HD video conferencing, even present from an iPad. Try it free for 30 days. No credit card required to get started. Visit GoToMeeting.com, click on the Try It Free button, and use promo code TNT. And by IT Pro TV. Are you looking to upgrade your IT skills or prepare for certification? IT Pro TV offers engaging and informative tutorials streamed to your Roku, computer, or mobile device. For 50% off the lifetime of your account, go to itpro.tv/TNT and use the code TNT50. And by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website or online portfolio. For a free trial and 10% off, go to squarespace.com and use offer code TNT11. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Sarah Lane.
I'm Aya Zakhar.
And I'm Jason Howell.
And this is the team that assembles to bring you the most important stories of the Tech News Day, starting with the top 10 of the day in the news fuse. Finish it. Reuters reports that Samsung says sales of Galaxy Gear smartwatches reached 800,000, which would make it the most popular smartwatch to date. That not only beats the pessimistic market watchers, but Samsung's own expectations. The company says it will expand sales promotions for the watch.
Bloomberg Businessweek reports that Dropbox plans on raising $250 million more than it already has in the next few weeks. The company, this is according to anonymous sources, seeks a valuation upwards of $8 billion, possibly more, which is double its last round, which closed in October of 2011. Dropbox just reached 200 million users, which is about 10 times as many people as it had at the end of 2010. Its revenue has grown 20-fold since late 2010 and now is said to be in the hundreds of millions of dollars per year.
In news that should surprise very few, the Financial Times reports Nokia shareholders have approved the sale of its devices and services division to Microsoft. And the acquisition was announced back in September, and the deal is expected to officially close in quarter one of next year. Microsoft is paying Nokia approximately $7.2 billion in cash for Nokia's devices and services business, patent licenses, and map data licensing.
It's also no surprise that game consoles are sold for about cost or at a loss, so get ready to be not surprised again. All Things D got a peek at IHS's cost estimate for the Sony PS4, which is about $381 for parts and assembly. That leaves a nice fat margin of $18 profit for Sony on each device, as long as you're not counting marketing and overhead, and, well, you get the picture. Sony's continuing to make money on games and possibly the occasional video or music sale. Just as a comparison, the PS3 cost $805 to build when it launched in 2006 and sold for $500. $599, I mean.
Freedom Pop, the mobile virtual network operator, or MVNO, has implemented a bring-your-own-device program for older model Sprint WiMAX phones and even the LTE-powered Samsung Galaxy S3 under a Freedom Pop plan. The company launched its VoIP and IP messaging service in beta last month and gave about 10,000 customers willing to buy a $99 HTC Evo Design a free 200-minute, 500-message, and 500-megabyte monthly plan. Now it's allowing another 10,000 subscribers to use the Evo 4G, which is $99, as well as taking in customers who port over Sprint devices.
After being contacted by a murder victim's parent, Google will remove an image of the murder victim that was findable on Google Maps. The victim was 14-year-old Kevin Barrera, who was found near railway tracks in Richmond, California. Google Maps satellite imagery captured that scene. Google VP of Maps Brian McClendon says, "Our hearts go out to the family of this young boy, and Google thinks it can update the satellite images in 8 days.
The U.S. Office of the Director of National Intelligence has released partially redacted documents detailing secret court decisions relating to the NSA's now-ended program of capturing metadata from the Internet. Two opinions have attracted the most attention, one by Judge Colleen Collar-Cottley, called the requested authorization enormous, but granted it in deference to the executive branch. Another by Judge John D. Bates found the NSA exceeded the scope of authorized acquisition continuously, but then reluctantly allowed the program to continue again in deference. Documents were released in response to a lawsuit sponsored by the ACLU and the Electronic Freedom Foundation.
Or Frontier Foundation.
Frontier Foundation. Who fight for freedom? Sorry.
It kind of works. On the frontier. The Apple TV is sporting a couple new apps from Yahoo and PBS today. Yahoo Screen includes clips from Saturday Night Live, The Colbert Report, and The Daily Show, as well as some live news and events and music. The PBS app lets users watch a variety of its programs in full and offers customized programming based on your local PBS affiliate. Type in your zip code for that. Today's updates are for U.S. customers only.
53, the company that made the iPad app Paper, now has a stylus named Pencil. Pencil? Paper? Get it? Yeah, I guess we can expect Eraser next. Actually, yes. Eraser is on the other end of Pencil. It's an active stylus that uses Bluetooth to tell the iPad which end is touching the tablet, so you can draw with the pencil end and then just flip it around and erase with the other without having to do anything else. It can also distinguish between your hand and the stylus, so you can rest your palm on the tablet while you're writing. The aluminum model will cost you $50, the walnut one $60. Both purchases unlock all of Paper App's in-app purchases, and the pencil should ship 2 to 3 weeks from order.
During Microsoft's final shareholder meeting with Steve Ballmer, CEO, Microsoft Chairman Bill Gates spoke and got choked up as he talked about the search for Ballmer's replacement.
Now we've got a commitment to make sure that the next CEO is the right person for the right time, for the company we both love. And we share a commitment that Microsoft will succeed as a company that makes the world a better place.
That's Bill Gates, CE crying edition right there. Gates pointed out that the company has had only two CEOs and thanked Ballmer directly for his leadership over the last 13 years.
Bill Gates has a sad. This episode of Tech News Today brought to you by Citrix and GoToMeeting with HD Faces. You probably know that feeling you have when you have a great idea. I'm not as familiar with it myself. No, we all are. We've all had great ideas at least once. And when you get one, you want to be able to share it with people, your coworkers, your clients. You want to share it right away. Flesh it out. Bring it to life before it leaves you, before it escapes, while that inspiration is fresh. But how do you get your team together on a moment's notice when they're all over the freaking world? Well, you use GoToMeeting by Citrix, the powerfully simple way to meet online. With GoToMeeting, you can connect, you can brainstorm, you can collaborate instantly wherever you or your team are located, from any computer, from your smartphone, from your tablet. And you can share screens, work together on documents, work together on spreadsheets, projects, all of it in real time. You just turn on your webcam, turn your meeting into a group HD video conference. It's like being in the same room. You see people face to face. We rely on GoToMeeting right here at Twit to do meetings with clients and people spread all over the country. We've got hosts everywhere. You should try it too. Start hosting a GoToMeeting in seconds from your computer or mobile device by signing up for a 30-day free trial. There's no credit card required to get started. Visit GoToMeeting.com, click the Try It Free button, and use the promo code TNT. That's GoToMeeting.com, promo code TNT. And we thank Citrix and GoToMeeting for their support of Tech News Today. All right, joining us to discuss the stories of the day, gathering around the round table, is Steve Kovac, senior tech editor at Business Insider. Good to have you back on the show, Steve.
Yeah, thanks for having me again.
We got some good stuff to talk about today. Let's start with, forget $3 billion for Snapchat. Dropbox, that's a product. $8 billion, Sarah Lane.
Yeah, I mean, the Snapchat thing is, I mean, we're still just sort of kicking around like, well, why didn't they take the $3 billion? You've got Pinterest, who's has a ballooning valuation, some say is also pretty crazy. But yeah, Dropbox is raking in the money. Bloomberg Businessweek says they're looking to raise that additional $250 million. It would put the company at a valuation of about $8 billion. However, it's not so crazy if you compare that to, I don't know, I mean, a company like Twitter. Twitter has a hard time figuring out its revenue model. Dropbox really has one. Revenue has grown fast, now in the hundreds of millions of dollars area. Although O'Malley of GigaOm says that Dropbox is on its way to $1 billion in revenue, meaning a $1 billion run rate, which is basically looking over the next year. If revenue continues as is, it'd be a $1 billion annual take-in, which is quite good. So you figure, all right, well, what does Dropbox want the extra money for? It wants to expand, obviously. What areas is it going to expand into? Started out as a consumer product, clearly has made quite a few strides in being a more design and feature-friendly consumer product, but really has gotten into the business market. New services aimed at businesses, IT administrators. I think more than ever, Dropbox wants to be on par with another very sort of enterprise-focused company like Box, even offerings from Microsoft and Google and Amazon. And it has 200 million users, so that's pretty impressive. It's grown 10 times its user base since about 2010. So I don't know, Steve, what do you think? I mean, they have more money. Do they definitely expand into the business sector? I mean, so many companies kind of offer what Dropbox offers as a standalone product in their own bundles.
Yeah, I think you kind of hit it right on the head. It's the enterprise. That's where all the money is. And also, excuse my colleague on the treadmill desk behind me. She's we're testing out a treadmill desk in the office.
But, I'm fine. She's keeping in shape. That's good.
Yeah, she is. Oh, she just looked over. Anyway, so I think enterprise is where like a lot of the money is. Box is doing really successful there, and clearly Dropbox is seeing the success there. And then you look at services like Google. So when small businesses like my own, when we sign up for a Google services account with Google Drive and Gmail and so forth, all that kind of stuff already comes baked in. So there's a huge opportunity for Dropbox to come in and prove that they're better than all these. And like I said, there are a ton of businesses looking for ways to solve these problems of swapping files between employees and so forth. And so there's a huge opportunity there for them. And I think that's where all this investor interest is coming in, especially since they just announced all that new enterprise products.
Yeah, it's quite a different conversation than around some of these other startups that don't have a proven business model. Even Twitter going public with still no profitability yet. It's profitability in the future. Dropbox seems to have a very stable business model. You got a product, you pay for it. It's something people like. People love it. I love it. I use Dropbox all the time. I rely on it. And so the question isn't, can they make money? The question is, can they make even more money? Can they get in and throw elbows with the big guys like Microsoft, like Cisco? There's some big cloud companies making mergers out there. Are they gonna move that direction? And frankly, as a consumer, I'm kind of worried about that. I mean, I want Dropbox to succeed. I don't wish them anything ill, but I also want them to have the focus to make sure that the consumer product that I rely on to just sync my files across multiple devices stays quality the way it has been right now. I don't want them to start trying to, nickel and dime me, which is often what happens when a company shifts focus to enterprise and they start making all their money off the big guys.
Well, the thing about Dropbox, though, is that they've been charging with a very familiar model, right? They're charging you for storage. They're not charging you for, like, download speeds or upload speeds or any of those artificial kind of barriers that you could see at other online services. But the other thing about Dropbox that's been really smart, I think, over the past couple of years is all their partnerships with things like Samsung. You get a phone, you get 50 gigabytes for free for a year, and then after that year's up, you're like, I'm not going to move my data. I'm going to start paying Dropbox money to keep my data up there. And as files get larger and larger and you have more and more media, Dropbox adding in features like camera uploads, so you're kind of constantly uploading files, videos, and everything. You don't want to leave Dropbox once you have everything set over there. So I think they've kind of infiltrated the consumer world really easily, because you keep, like, I know once my 50 gigabyte trial is over, I'm going to end up paying for this. There's no way on earth I'm just going to switch off of this. So I think their consumer-based stuff is pretty strong still.
It is, but it's funny. On Facebook, of all places, somebody who is not a real technical friend of mine said, she's got a new baby and there's a lot of photos. And she said, what's just the cloud-based storage for photos and videos that I should go with? And my response is always, oh, Dropbox. That's the obvious answer for me. But again, as Dropbox wants to move into more of an enterprise sector, there might be different tiers of pricing models. Yeah, how do they make sure that they retain what is definitely their core user base, which are the consumers, and be able to appeal to people who just want it to work and not have to think about it too much?
Yeah, I just want it to be a drive. I just want it to act like a hard drive, which is what it's always done best. I don't want to have to think about it as a cloud service that I have to manage. I hope that doesn't change. Galaxy Gear, 800,000 IS. Those numbers surprise you?
Not really, because the 800,000 number is kind of suspect. So there's all kinds of stories coming out, right? So how well is the Galaxy Gear watch selling? Now, the first report that came out yesterday was a translated report from Korea Business, which led to other reports saying that Galaxy Gear has only sold 50,000 units worldwide. That was then corrected. It looked like it's 50,000 units sold in South Korea. Then Samsung gave a statement to Reuters saying that the Gear sales reached 800,000 and also said it's the most sold wearable watch available in the marketplace, and we plan to expand its availability by expanding mobile devices that work with the Gear. Right now, the Gear only works with the Note 3 and the Galaxy S4, with more to come. However, Korean publication Yonhap says that the number Samsung was quoting, the 800,000, is actually the numbers of watches shipped, not sold. Samsung Korea confirmed to The Verge that the figures do relate to shipments. So it's not what was sold, it's what was been shipped. So the numbers for comparison, if you're wondering, so let's say that it's somewhere between 50,000 and 800,000. Pebble smartwatch, they've sold 190,000 units, according to ZDNet. Samsung has sold 5 million Samsung Galaxy Note 3 units since September. And the Note 3 is one of the few devices that works with the Gear. Steve, does the Gear seem like a success? Is it just early? What do you make of this?
Well, I tested the Gear, and I absolutely hated it. It promises a lot. It promises to, you know, reduce how often you bring out your cell phone and, you know, check notifications. But, you know, so many times you'll get a new tweet or a new Gmail. You tap it, and it still forces you to look on your phone. So you have to look at the use case to kind of determine if people are buying it. And by the way, I'm talking to sources at Samsung this morning trying to prepare for you guys, and they don't even know how many they sold. So they're telling different publications different things, shipped versus sold. Sure, there might be 800,000 of them out there, but I'd be shocked if that many were on that many people's wrists. Samsung's David Yoon, one of the top executives over there, spoke at our conference last week. And even he was telling me and our conference members, like, even people within the company aren't that bullish on this product, and they call it a version 1.0, and, you know, they are aware of its limitations. So the question is, what does Samsung tell all these customers who have dropped $300 on this thing, you know, that it doesn't work really well and it's going to get better? That's not a good excuse. And I think people are realizing that. And I think what we should really be looking at is, okay, so 50,000 people bought it or 100,000 people bought it. How many are returning it after they're disappointed with it? And that's the real question right now, I think.
Yeah, there have been reports out there, and these are unconfirmed, that Best Buy has 30% return rates, right? And so that's what makes this all make sense to me. I'm going to guess this 800,000 number is shipped, and they were trying to fudge that. Now, typically, the shipped number isn't that far off of the sales number. I mean, companies don't typically just ship a bunch of products without having retailers who think they can sell them. So what could be the problem here is Samsung did a great job of marketing this thing. They had these really slick commercials. The retail stores bought into it, said, yeah, we're going to sell these. It's going to have interest. And the retail stores sold them, and they're being returned as people find out what Steve found out, which is, this thing doesn't really deliver on the promise of what I thought it was going to do. It doesn't work with my device as well as I thought, or it doesn't work with my device at all because I didn't check into which devices it's compatible with. I wouldn't be surprised if that ends up being the story once we needle out all the facts from the various sources here.
I mean, besides the Pebble, which, you know, is a little bit different because it was a Kickstarter project, at least the Galaxy Gear is going to be thought of. And, this is the first iteration of a product that might end up, you know, being really, really awesome down the road, even if it doesn't appeal to me now. But it's the first, you know, it's certainly one of them. It's kind of funny that they say it's the most sold wearable watch available in the marketplace. Well, okay.
It beat all those Microsoft Spot watches from 2004.
Yeah, that's low.
Yeah. It's easy to do when you're the first one, but yeah, I mean I don't know that the numbers matter so much. I mean, the 50,000, the 800,000, it's, you know, somewhere between the two of them. There's a demand, right? This is a new hot a piece of technology, and we're just going to see a lot more of them.
Now, that's an interesting phrase. Like, is there demand for this? Because if 200,000 people are getting the Pebble Watch, and then a couple of 100,000 are getting the Gear, and there's billions of people on Earth, and they want to have phones. To have a companion device is the same thing as having a tablet almost. Why would you need this device? How are you going to sell this as an actual thing? It seems like there's been rumors of every company going into watches. Samsung trying it with a very a version 1.0 product. Is there really a market for all this stuff, considering it's a complete and utter luxury?
Right. No one's answered that question either. And, you know, we keep hearing like wearables, next big thing, next big thing. We're going to be wearing our smartphones on our wrists. But so far, every iteration of the thing, even the Pebble, which is a decent device, hasn't answered that question why everyone needs it. It's not going to a mass market device. They're not going to sell 100 million smartwatches, no matter who makes it, just the way they sell 100 million iOS devices or iPhones. So you think about the companies who are working on it, Microsoft, Apple, HTC, whoever else, and haven't released a smartwatch yet. They have their work cut out for them. Every time I test one of these things, I keep thinking to myself, wow, Apple really needs to wow us because everything out there so far is just a dud.
Smartwatches are not the only product with a long history of overpromising and underdelivering. Virtual reality could be considered in some sectors the poster child of that kind of situation. But like tablets and like other products, they are only disappointing until somebody gets it right. And Valve thinks it's got it right. They've posted their schedule for the Steam Dev Days coming up January 15th through the 16th in Seattle. One of the sessions is called What VR Could, Should, and Almost Certainly Will Be Within 2 Years by Steam developer Mike Abrish. He's a Valve employee. He had a post in April 2012 that caused a lot of heads to turn because he was talking about them hiring an engineer to work on virtual reality. Here's the description of his session that's coming up mid-January. We've figured out what affordable virtual reality hardware will be capable of within a couple of years and assembled a prototype which demonstrates that such VR hardware is capable of stunning experiences. This type of hardware is almost certainly going to appear in short order, and the time to start developing for it is now. And their talk is actually going to show off a prototype, let a few devs actually try it out after the talk, and then right after that is listed a talk by Joe Ludwig about VR in Steam particularly. Now, Oculus Rift has support from Valve's games, Half-Life 2 and Team Fortress 2. And don't forget that Valve actually let their augmented reality project go. That's Technical Illusions, Jerry Ellsworth's project, Cast AR. But Valve seems to be saying the things that we've been hearing for decades. Virtual reality, it's finally here. We finally figured it out. Steve, what percentage chance have you got that Valve actually cracked it?
I'd give it, let's say an 80% chance, just based on what I've seen with the Oculus. And I tried the Oculus for the first time a few months ago, and I was blown away. Better than anything I saw in the 90s or the Virtual Boy or whatever, you know, ho-hum attempts
that people
had.
That's almost damning it with faint praise to say it's better than the Virtual Boy, but okay.
No, yeah, right, but you know what I mean. Anything that you've ever tried. But that thing works. And I mean, you actually feel like you're there. I went on a roller coaster simulation. I got dizzy. And I was just sitting in my chair. And then you pair it with, I forget the name of it. It's Omni something, the little treadmill thing that you walk around on. I mean, it's shocking how it tricks your brain. And the technology has clearly caught up to the promise. At least it looks a little funky now, and hopefully they can slim it down. But, you know, unlike smartwatches where the technology hasn't caught up to the promise, just use the Oculus Rift for 5 minutes and you get it. And it's amazing. I think that's the future of at least, you know, hardcore gaming.
I don't know. I'm skeptical. I haven't tried the Oculus Rift, so in all fairness there, or the Cast AR, and I've heard those are amazing experiences. But this, again, requires you to put something on your face. And the Virtual Boy, I remember that. I tried it out. I rented it at Blockbuster. I kid you not.
I had to
sit there at the table and put your head into it. I actually made the mistake of trying it on in the car. Bad idea. If this works, that'd be amazing. I think that I really think that Illumiroom for Microsoft might be the real way to go. Where you have a projector really making you feel like you're in Compass as opposed to having to put something on your body. But if it works, I'd be surprised. And I'm optimistic. I want it to work. I love this idea that being we can just turn your head and have a very natural experience. But so far, it hasn't been cracked, I think. And I don't know if Valve's the one to do it.
I mean, a lot of this can be done, you know, you mentioned having a projector, but it's like, then you need the room and you need the lighting to be, you know, it's like, that's more expensive and problematic than just having something that's like an immersive experience. It's, you know, it's basically just putting a cloak over your face. You don't have to be in public. This can all be done in the comfort of your own living room. So if you look ridiculous, it's almost less ridiculous than some of the glass holes that we see around.
Yeah,
did I just say
I
that?
Agree with,
yeah, I did.
Yes, you did. And that's okay. Fine. It's become kind of a common term, I guess.
It's a thing. I didn't make
it's
that
a
up.
Thing.
Okay.
Right. With Molly Wood. I've tried the Oculus Rift, and I had the same reaction as Steve, that I just found it very impressive as a piece of hardware. So I'm curious what Valve has got that they think can go right along with that. And Valve is the kind of company that'll say, yeah, we'll support the Oculus Rift and we'll have our own prototype too, because what sells more games and makes games better is good for all of us. So I'm very curious if it's a partnership or if it's their own internal thing, which according to Mike Abrash, and I apologize, Mike, if I'm mispronouncing your name, which I probably am, they've been working on this internally for a couple of years. So now we might have a couple of good virtual reality headsets to compete. And that would be great for consumers, I think. Let's take a quick break. Thank our other sponsor for today's show, itpro.tv. You're watching This Week in Tech Network. You're watching Twit. You're watching Tech News Today. Chances are you're probably acting as the IT guy for your friends and family if you're not already doing it as a job. Have you ever thought about working in IT professionally, though? It can be difficult to know where to start, what to study, and what certifications you'll need to validate your skills and get hired. Or if, like I mentioned, you're already an IT pro, you know that IT is constantly changing. Vendors are always coming out with new technologies, new certifications all the time. It can be difficult to keep up. That's why some fans of Twit created IT Pro TV. It's a video network dedicated exclusively to the world of IT. Whether you're looking to jumpstart a career in information technology, you're already working in the field, IT Pro TV supplements traditional learning methods, but it's fun, it's engaging, it's good video, and that means you learn more and you get better prepared for your certification exams. Over 100 hours of content, 20 hours being added each week. They have video courses for CompTIA, Microsoft, Cisco, and more. It doesn't have to be boring. You can learn more, get certified, get your career going. Check out itpro.tv/TNT and upgrade your brain with the most popular certifications recognized by employers. There's a free preview on the site if you want to check out some of their videos or their live stream. They do a live stream. Where'd they get that idea? Good idea, you guys. Subscriptions are normally $57 per month or $570 for the entire year, but we've got a special offer for you because they're huge fans of Twit. If you sign up between now and the end of the year using the code TNT50, you'll receive 50% off your subscription for the lifetime of your account. That's only $28.50 a month or $285 for a year. Go compare that to some of the courses out there or some of the colleges that you might have to go online. It's a heck of a bargain. itpro.tv/TNT. Use the code TNT50 to receive 50% off. And we thank IT Pro TV for their support of Tech News Today. All right. Apple TV, even though we're not getting a television or the vaunted, you know, new version of Apple television, they keep adding apps to this thing. It's becoming richer and richer of an experience, Sarah.
Yeah, that's true. I mentioned in the news that there are two apps. I looked on my Apple TV this morning. They automatically showed up when I fired up my Apple TV. Yahoo app, it's called Yahoo Screen. It closely mirrors the iOS app, really. It's just now available on your Apple TV, so a nice big TV. And it has clips from Saturday Night Live, The Daily Show, Colbert Report. We've talked a little bit in the past of Yahoo creating these media relationships, so it has access to these to this content. My first reaction was, oh, that's awesome, because one of the reasons I pay for Hulu Plus is because I like to watch The Daily Show regularly. I have to watch it a day later, but in general, it's like, that's part of the price of admission. I love that about Comedy Central, but if you look on the Yahoo app, I mean, it's all clips. You're not just going to be like, oh, here's yesterday's show from start to finish. Let me play it. It doesn't work that way. So it's not exactly a replacement, but it's kind of getting there. On the PBS side, though, this is great. I found the PBS app was pretty buggy because I was trying to activate my code and tell it what my local PBS affiliate is in San Francisco. However, I think it's probably just because there are a lot of people that are trying to sign up right now. Hooks into your local station, connects via Facebook, Google Plus, or a PBS account in order to get more information about, you know, what you like and what your interests are and get some data from you. And then you can watch a variety of PBS programs that are in full. They're big programs, Antiques Roadshow, Frontline, all that sort of stuff. The new season of Downton Abbey, for example. So both of those are, you know, it's, I'll take them. I really find, for me, I use my Apple TV more and more just when I don't have to switch over to my Roku, just because it's more convenient and I like the setup. And I think the Yahoo stuff is pretty interesting because it's not just Comedy Central clips. It's quite an interesting collection of content from around the web and TV, although it still is pretty clip-based. Steve, what do you think? I mean, is Apple just going to kind of do a slow march to an Apple TV app collection that all of a sudden seems really robust eventually?
Well, this makes me want them to start allowing developers just to start creating stuff on their own like they do on the iPhone or the iPad, because, you know, they're cutting these deals with these content providers themselves and helping them build their apps. And, you know, but and this year has been a huge, huge year for it. I think I can't remember a year since the Apple TV 2 came out that we've had more new channels come on. It seems like every few weeks, you know, we finally got HBO, and the gap is really narrowing between what the Xbox and other video game consoles and the Roku can do. I find myself, like you, using my Xbox and Roku a lot less just because it's all on there. But I think the real answer now, the next step, is to just open it up. You know, let's start playing games. iOS 7 has game controller support. Why not use my iPhone as a game controller for some of these awesome games hitting iOS? It's about time, and I'm ready to see it. I'm ready to see developers get excited about TV, and that could be a great transition if and when Apple does decide to finally create that mythical television set. We'll finally have this really robust ecosystem in place already if and when that device launches.
I have that same impulse, Steve, but then part of me wonders if maybe Apple isn't doing the right thing, at least in keeping it focused on television, right? If it starts to be available to have any app on there and have developers open up apps, then it can start to lose its focus.
Maybe more restrictions, not necessarily, you know, anyone can make anything. I don't necessarily need to check Twitter or Facebook on my TV, but games definitely would be huge. How great would it be to be playing Infinity Blade on the train or your commute and then come up and pick up where you left off on your big screen TV? That would be awesome.
That would be very cool. Although I have an Ouya, I don't really use it all that much, and it can do similar things. And I don't play the Angry Birds on Roku or any of the games there either. So maybe that's just me. I don't know if I'm an exception in that.
Yeah, but see, with Apple adding more and more channels or more apps, right? So we're getting this ridiculously large, cluttered interface, and the only way to really manage that is to go to the parental controls and turn things off. At some point, do they have to give the user a way to curate this stuff? Because there's a bunch of stuff like on there, like, I don't know, was it Kello or a bunch of these other apps that I never use, or the let's say I don't subscribe to the NBA.TV subscription. Why is that always there? A whole bunch of these things that are there but aren't used. And on top of this, if Apple doesn't do anything special with these apps like Roku's been doing, Roku has a search built into this point because they have hundreds of channels and you're trying to find the content somewhere. Right now, you have to know where your content is. Is it in the PBS app? Is it in the Yahoo app? Is it on YouTube? Wherever it is. Apple hasn't made it easy to find anything yet, so this product might be gaining all these channels, but there's nothing making it more compelling than a Roku 3 at this point because it just doesn't have super-duper features other than a consistent UI from app to app.
Well, it has YouTube, Hulu Plus, and Netflix. It's the only console that has all three of those, even though they're in the Apple format and stuff, and not everybody loves that. So that there's a big advantage there for some people. Plus, a lot of people have the iTunes, iCloud, et cetera. If you live in that universe, it makes a difference.
iTunes Radio, Vivo. I mean, I'm starting to use my Apple TV to, you know, stream music and even watch music videos quite a bit. There is something, at least as far as I'm concerned, about a consistent design. I mean, that actually counts for a lot for me. I've never liked that about Roku. Roku's great in many ways, but I wouldn't call it a fabulous designed product.
Well, before we move on, I do want to point out, I didn't find a full season of Downton Abbey on the PBS app when I played around with it this morning. Did you find the full season? Or 'cause I only found one episode.
No, apparently it's not until later this year because there's some run that they have. I think it's with Amazon. Is that
Amazon
right?
Amazon has previous seasons, so that's why you probably have a limited number of old eps there. And the current season is running on ITV in the UK. That doesn't come to PBS until January.
Right. So
that's when you'll probably start to see the new season, which is yet to come out here in the US.
That's what I would guess as well, yeah.
We got an interesting interview up on Wired today with Peter Sundi, co-founder of the Pirate Bay. He's no longer at the Pirate Bay. He's running for European Parliament in 2014. It's a long, interesting article. He ranges on a lot of topics, but I want to touch on a couple here. He describes nerds as the new elite. He says they're the very people who should be helping fix the political system, but instead they avoid it. He He says, you are not going to stop the police from chasing you just because you have the best encryption in the world. Quote, you actually need to go somewhere and vote and make sure you don't have corrupt police, he explains. But there's a faith in technology as the savior, as the new messiah, and that's definitely not the case. I really don't see any revolution happening. He also talks about digital rights needing to be enshrined in law. He says, we don't really know what it's going to be like if we lose all these rights or what happens when the data about you starts to be abused. That's not going to happen until it's too late. So he's like, we have all these fears because of spying, but so far, nothing really horrible has happened. And by the time it does, it'll be too late. At least that's what he thinks. He also talks about how he's critical of centralized services, Facebook being dominated in social network, Twitter being the dominant microblog, Netflix being the dominant video service, Spotify being the dominant music service, because he says these centralized services make it easier for governments to do bad things because they only have one main source that they have to go to for most of their spying needs or surveillance or abuse of rights or whatever. What do you think of Sunday's call to arms? Steve, is he fringe politician just talking crazy, or has he got a point that the nerds actually need to get engaged in the system? Seems like an odd thing for a revolutionary to say, maybe.
He's definitely a fringe politician, but he does make a point. It's a standard point that we hear so often that if you don't like what's going on, vote the people you don't like out and vote the people you do like in. And that sounds really good on paper and so forth. But I don't see someone like this affecting too much change. I mean, maybe some nerds will listen up. The Reddit community might listen up. But overall, this, it's not going to make that much of a difference, I don't think. There are way deeper issues. I think the companies involved, the big tech companies involved in making sure that our data is safe and all that good stuff, have to work with the government a lot closer and be as transparent as they possibly can about this kind of stuff. And I don't think electing techies into office necessarily is going to fix that right away.
Well, I asked Sarah, you're quiet. You're expecting technology to fix your problems, aren't you?
Well, the thing is, you know, as nerds, we're like, okay, there's always a workaround. We can get around anything. But the thing is, we shouldn't have to. That's the we do have this attitude. We can take care of things ourselves. But if you have people that are knowledgeable, that actually understand what's going on in theory, and they're not being swayed by lobbyists. I mean, that's always the big thing that happens. That brings a lot of cynicism. No matter what you do, how much you vote, there are all these big lobbies out there that can basically override your vote by paying enough politicians to exist and vote their own way. If you don't have this, like, I wouldn't say grassroots effort, if you don't have people actually getting involved, you're never going to get anywhere. So it's I'm usually of the mind, get in the system so you can actually affect it. But as long as there's no actual change, there's always going to be workarounds. So it's just it's fighting the good fight, right?
I think nerds being the new elite, that's sort of whatever. It doesn't matter. But yeah, the question is how many people who are in positions of power to build tools that can help, you know, the general population are actually doing those sorts of things. I mean, I can think of several situations where tech companies are trying to change the status quo. I mean, I don't know. Think about some of Uber's lawsuits in various cities in the U.S. I mean, that's really specific, but that's something that, you know, it's there's a lot of effort going into saying, well, wait a second, things aren't actually good for consumers the way that they are right now. We'd like to make them better, and probably because of that, private car transportation apps will never be the same, but. Yeah, I mean, what does he need? Does he
That's
have specific
a
people in
That's
mind?
That's a company, Sarah. He's talking about the individuals and the open source movements and the peer-to-peer file sharing movements. He's saying those people aren't doing anything to change the system. They just run off and make their own system, and it doesn't include most people. And therefore, it's not actually going to change anything in the world. And the companies like Uber, as they get more successful, will just cooperate with the governments and go along with stuff.
Yeah, I don't quite understand then. What his call to arms is it we should focus less on the corporate side of things and make sure that we, as you know, it's kind of like you sort of need a centralized
well he's saying base. if all the people who are out there doing these workaround projects in the sidelines all went and engaged in the current political system in the political office, it would overwhelm that system. I think that's a bit idealistic and optimistic, frankly. But that's what he's saying is you're not going to make any change by not engaging with it. I think maybe a parallel system would be a better solution. You just come up with your own shadow government on the internet. That's actually what the Declaration of Cyber Independence was meant to spark back in the 90s. So, you know, who knows? These things go in cycles. Interesting, thought-provoking article. You can go check it out, wired.co.uk. I also started a G+ thread about this. Some interesting discussions going on there as well. Let's talk about some other kinds of freedom. Free as in beer.
Yeah.
Not free as in speech.
Yeah, so Best Buy and Sprint are running a promotion where if you're a student, you can get 1 year of unlimited talk, text, and a gigabyte of data. That's for 1 year. It's all free. Promotion started yesterday and runs to January 4th. Now, here's how it works. There's obviously a lot of hoops you got to jump through. The student has to purchase the phone at the student-activated price, which averages about $530. Then you have to activate it on Sprint Unlimited, the My Way plan. So you have to pay for the phone, the activation fee, taxes, etc. After you do that, then you verify with Sprint that you're a student within 14 days of purchase. Once verified, you get that 1 year of unlimited talk, text, with 1 gigabyte of data. $10 more, like give them $10 a month and get unlimited data. There's no need to sign up for a 2-year contract. Students can get up to 9 extra free years when a new line is added to the same account they're on. So you'll have to check the show notes for the link to see how to get that crazy deal. Steve, the free Sprint service for a year, it kind of seems like that drug dealer model. Like, hey, you're the first one's free. Do you think this is going to lead to long-term Sprint users?
Not at all. And I mean, there's a ton to unpack here. You know, we're seeing the little guys, and by little guys, I mean T-Mobile and Sprint, just try everything they can to gain attention. T-Mobile has been really doing well at that and driving that narrative with, you know, their upgrade plans and the free data abroad and so forth. But, you know, I think the big barrier here is you have to buy the phone at full price. And us Americans, we're so used to buying $200, $100, $50 phones and sticking with that 2-year contract anyway. So there's that sticker shock immediately, you know, of $500 or $600 just to get the phone activated. And so even if you are using or are getting free data and free talk and text for a year, I don't know, it doesn't seem like that good of a value. And, you know, there is that pyramid schemey thing in, you know, add a new line and we'll give you an option to continue for 9 years. And that's, Sprint's been trying that in other ways by, you know, come over to Sprint, we'll give you $100 off your next smartphone. It's all about growing their subscriber base, and they're trying anything they can possibly do. But again, I think that initial cost of $500 or $600 just to get off the ground on this plan is just going to be a huge barrier for a lot of people.
Yeah, if this wasn't a student plan, it might be more intriguing to me. But the idea that's like, hey, students who have no money, give us a lot of money, and then you'll get something that's kind of free, unless you want more than a gigabyte, which we know students use a lot of data. So we're actually going to charge you $10 a month for the data you need to use. But really, no, it just doesn't work.
Yeah. I don't know. I think college students might be used to seeing outrageous prices on things. What, a textbook's like $150? It's a book. It's $150.
Sure, they're used to seeing it. They're used to paying it. And then they don't have any money left to pay $530 for a phone, though.
They could subsidize it with, like, their parents or this scheme, like the pyramid scheme. They could charge their friends for this free service.
Say, compare this to the Freedom Pop story that we had in the news views. I think that's a much better, much more attractive situation for somebody in a college situation. And that's available for anybody. You don't have to show a student ID or anything.
Yeah,
just find an old phone.
I don't see Sprint like gaining a ton of customers with this either. I just wanted to see what was going to happen with this because if you got to jump through all these hoops and you can get the service for free for a year, and then you're still stuck to the Sprint network. So that's the other downside. They have that Spark service that's coming out. Well, it has the tri-band LTE, but their services, their coverage map is nowhere near Verizon or AT&T. So to get people on board is going to be pretty rough.
That's it. Too many hoops. I think you nailed it right there. All right, time for the randomizer. Ladies and gentlemen, selfie is your word of 2013. Oxford Dictionary does this every year. They name one word as the big new word. Other shortlisted words included twerk, the dance move. Schmeet, meaning a
that was
form
so
of
nerdy.
I love it.
It's the nation's latest dance move.
Thank you.
It's called the twerk.
I'm going to come out with a Fats Domino record about it shortly. Schmeet is a form of meat synthetically produced from biological tissue. I had not heard that one myself. I'd at least heard twerk. I don't think I've ever performed at the dance move. But what do you guys think? Selfie? The word of the year? Yeah.
I mean, I think selfie is, that's pretty strong. Everyone knows what that means. It's definitely part of my vernacular.
And I feel like I hear it a lot more lately. I don't know about you.
Yeah.
It sounds like it's an old word now, doesn't it? Or is it just me? It seems like it's been around for a couple of years. A selfie.
I don't know. Selfie just always sounded kind of dirty to me. So I don't like the word. I don't like that it's in the dictionary.
Yeah, the man who doesn't like phablet doesn't like selfie. Got it.
But you know what it is.
Yeah, I know. What I do find interesting, fascinating, especially over the last few years, is just how much the internet terminology and language has infiltrated the regular dictionary. Like, I guess it's just the evolution of a living language, but it's just interesting that shortened words and I don't know, maybe this is just how it works. It's just the internet seems to put its own spin on it entirely.
Yeah, I know what you mean. These kids with their OK.
I know.
23 Skidoo.
And LOL. What is LOL?
All right, let's take a quick break.
Lots
Thank
of
our
love.
Other sponsor for today's show. That's what my mom thinks it is.
Lots my mom love. Thinks that too.
I have, I for a long time, I thought my mom was laughing at me in texts all the time. We have lots of love for Squarespace. They are our sponsor for today's show. They are always improving their platform. I want to tell them, like, guys, your platform's so good. But they're like, no, we can make it better. And they always are. They're working on it all the time, adding more beautiful designs, making it easier to use. And if you have even the slightest of problems, they're on. They're available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, on call. Customer support team has won numerous industry awards. Most recently, they got a Gold Stevie Award. And it's inexpensive. You're going to get hosting included. They take care of the hosting. You're going to get search engine optimized. You're going to get these beautiful templates that are award-winning designs. And your site will automatically adapt to mobile devices so that it looks like it was designed just for that device. And it all starts at just $8 a month, including a free domain name if you sign up for a year. In fact, if you know somebody who's starting a business and they've been saying, gosh, you know, I need to get a website. I think I'll hire a designer to do that. Help them out. Say, look, don't waste your time on that. If you can just do a little bit of the content part of it, Squarespace makes everything else easy. Start a trial. No credit card required. You can even build the website for them. Start your building their website. And then when you decide to sign up for Squarespace, make sure to use the offer code TNT11 to get 10% off and show your support for Tech News Today. We thank Squarespace for their support of Tech News Today. They've been great supporters of this show. Squarespace, everything you need to create an exceptional website. Hey, Sarah, do you have a calendar item too?
Yeah, there's actually quite a few things happening tomorrow. The Google Chrome Dev Summit, it's a two-day developer event happening in Mountain View, starts tomorrow. Also tomorrow, Google is shutting down its checkout product. We knew that was happening. That's official. The Nexus 5 is coming to T-Mobile. It'll be in stores tomorrow. $450 is the price tag on that guy. And, well, I could wait until tomorrow to talk about Wendell's birthday, but I feel like we all need a little bit of time to, like, get the cupcakes ready and everything. The very first version of Windows was released on November 20th, 1985. So kind of a big birthday to get ready for tomorrow.
Maybe that'll cheer Bill Gates up.
I hope birthday. So. Gosh, poor.
Have some cake.
You know, he's very emotional.
Yeah.
Emotional guy.
All right. I believe we have an email, IS.
Incoming message.
You're right, Tom. It's by Peter. And in episode 885, you guys seemed confused about why people were reacting negatively to YouTube comments and assumed it was because it was Google forcing people to use a new system to post comments. While that may be part of it, the bigger problem is the new comment system is flawed compared to the old one. For starters, the new comment system does not limit the amount of characters per comment, unlike the old one, because these comments are linked to Google Plus posts. This has brought forward a new form of trolling where people would copy whole scripts or ebooks and post them as comments, and if anyone unaware of this unknowingly clicks on the expand comment button, it stretches the comment page to an unreadable level. I didn't hear about this. Under the old commenting system, if a URL was detected, it would not allow the users to post the comment until it was gone. It was still possible to post URLs by disguising it, but it would be at least required by the user to actually type the link out. However, the new comment system takes away these protections and allows URLs to be inputted directly and automatically converts them into clickable links. I'm unsure if Google has responded to these concerns yet, but these were a lot of the major issues that made content providers disable comments in the first place, and those petitions started. When people said that Google made YouTube commenting worse, they tended to mean these things. Anyways, that's my input into the matter. I love your show, and thanks for everything you guys do.
I don't think we were confused, Peter. In fact, I think we even cited a couple examples of that sort of thing. We're just saying that There were trolls on the YouTube before saying horrible things, and now they have different ways to say horrible things. I don't know personally if that makes it worse. To me, it's more of a reaction to the change, and you're citing two examples of these things are changed, but I don't know that that's worse than the horrible comments that were said before. Maybe the links out is worse, but I actually like the fact that you can now have links, even if that means some people are going to misuse it. It means some people can actually use it for good too. And it takes a while for moderation to adapt to a new system and all that sort of thing. But Peter, we get it. We understand why people are upset with the Google Plus change. I think some of us are just saying, you know, maybe it's not for the worse. Maybe it's either equal or maybe it just wasn't rolled out very well. And Steve, are you one of the people who's upset with the YouTube comments? Do you have an opinion on that?
I don't leave a lot of YouTube comments, but I think it actually looks nicer, first of all. And second of all, doesn't it force you to use your own identity, which could maybe tamp down a little bit of the trolling and the fat shaming and the rude comments that we see on YouTube so much? But then again, every time something changes, whether it's on Facebook or YouTube or something, there's a huge uproar for a week and it's really messy. And then no one gives a crap in 2 years or a year or so. So I don't think this is going to be an issue very much longer.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. This one has a nice big head of steam. We'll see how long it takes for right. it to expire. But I think you're probably right.
People are using Google Plus now, so that's good for Google.
Good for Google. Yeah. I don't know how good it is for the rest of us. My objection would be more like now I have even more data consolidated into Google Plus. That's a whole different. That's an argument you don't hear as much. Some people are making it, I guess. Well, that brings us to the end of the show. Steve, thanks for joining us. Businessinsider.com/SAI, of course. You got anything special coming up? Anything you want to let folks know about?
Not really. I mean, end of the year, we're gearing up for CES, so that's going to be a huge time for us. But other than that, just stick around, follow us, see what we're up to. We have the best live news and analysis of tech that you can find out there. So besides you guys, of course.
Oh, well, thank you. We're complimentary. And it's always great having you. Thanks for joining us, man.
Yeah, of course. Thanks for having me, too.
Thanks to the folks in the audience for submitting on the subreddit. If you have not submitted, I'll thank you anyway. But get over there and check it out, technewstoday.reddit.com. It's one of the ways we tell what you guys are interested in hearing about. It's one of our sources for taking the temperature of the buzziness of tech news in any given day. You can also email us. Our email address is tnt@twit.tv. You can give us a call, leave us a voicemail, 260-TNT-SHOW. We have a YouTube channel you can subscribe to if that's your preferred method for viewing videos, youtube.com/technewstoday. And of course, the podcast, the show notes, our home on the web is twit.tv/TNT. We'll be back tomorrow with Michael Wolff as our guest. See you then.